Spirit, let. On page 465 of Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, the definition of God is stated as follows. God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. Mary Baker Eddy refers to God throughout the entire textbook, from the beginning, including the preface, through the last chapter, 17, and of course, 18 is fruitage, and those are testimonies from individuals. And of course, they mention God throughout, but Mary Baker Eddy herself refers to God constantly in the first 600 pages. There are different definitions she gives, different descriptions. And of course, that's natural because God is defined as being infinite. So there is not an ironclad definition that would not be open to variation in terms of the focus that one may be thinking about in referring to God, or even the order of the words that are used. And that would be for very specific reasons, that the focus may go from one aspect of God to another for a very particular reason. For purposes of this treatment, the definition read will be utilized because that is in the chapter recapitulation, chapter 14, which is a summary of Science and Health. The Key to the Scriptures portion of the textbook begins on chapter 15, and therefore chapter 14 is the summary of the first 13 chapters, and that's where the focus is on the definition of God as it is stated. In looking at this order of the words that are used, particularly the seven terms of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, spirit being the second one of those, demands that we look at what are the main features of spirit. And the one that we're going to focus on here is birth, which really means bringing forth in individual consciousness a new idea. The first chapter of the King James Version of the Bible is Genesis, and that is divided into a number of chapters, of course, and the first chapter is considered the spiritual record of creation. And that goes through verse 3 in chapter 2. And in that spiritual record, the word let is used in every one of the 7 days that are detailed in those verses just referred to. It's common to think of the Bible stating that God made all of these things, But Mary Baker Eddy clarifies that in stating that the word created should be replaced with the word the only. In the beginning, the only. Not in the beginning, God created. Not in beginning, but in the only. In the only existence there is. This is what the facts are. These are the seven important ingredients. And all words in the dictionary can basically be allocated to one of those seven terms as a description, and also one of the first four terms, which is the city four square, which is defined as the four words of Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science. So there's 11 words altogether that are utilized in this definition of God. The four are tantamount to the four operators in mathematics, the basic ones, which are add, subtract, multiply, and divide. The Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science represent the four operators of being the facts, the translation, demonstrating and proving it, and being it. So the Word is the facts. The Christ is translating it. Christianity is demonstrating and proving it. And science is being it. Looking at the seven terms, some of the basic elements are as follows. Mind represents creative activity, intelligence, wisdom and knowing, which are a part of omniscience, action, performance, power, omnipresence, and when we look at where does power come from, just think of an automobile that is rated at a certain number of horsepower. That means that under particular circumstances, it can produce power as described. Normally they refer to horsepower. I guess it's a carryover from 150 years ago or so, when horses were the primary mode of transportation and thought of as being power. So if one utilizes the creative ability of mind and couples that with the characters of omniscience just mentioned, which is intelligence, knowing, and wisdom, and puts that into action, then they will obtain performance, and that is measured as power. Mary Baker Eddy states that the good we do and embody gives us the only power obtainable. So that means the intelligence, wisdom, and knowing all have to be spiritual in nature and applied to doing something good. Spirit is termed to be the only substance. If we give a thought to that, we will revolutionize the way we think about everything. If we need money, we think about money. Or let's say if we think we need money, we think about money. Or the need for money, or the lack of money. Where are we going to get it? When are we going to get it? How am I going to do this or that without money? Whether it's pay the rent, pay the mortgage, buy gas for the car, buy food for the family or for oneself or whatever. But if one converts the thought of a medium to the real need, then it's much easier to convert thinking from a material to a spiritual basis. So what is the need if you're hungry? Is it satisfaction? Is it to get rid of the growl in your stomach? Or the feeling of absence of food? If you need to be over at some location that is different from where you are, is it because you need to be participating in some meeting, making a contribution to it, or even being the chief individual in charge? If you need to pay the rent or pay the mortgage or buy a house, is it because you're looking for the security and safety of having an enclosure, a possession, maybe a yard with a fence around it, or even without a fence, the beauty of the entrance so that you have a better feeling when you look at your home and walk into the front door? There is always something that can be defined as what you are really seeking, as opposed to the medium that is used to get there, which in most cases is money. Or it could be approval. You might feel a lack of love and you want approval from someone that says, yeah, you're a good person. Yes, I respect you. I love you. I will support you. Or whatever the situation is, it is probably not money that one really needs, but they need what the ultimate goal is. Whether it's a feeling or a change of feeling, for example, going from hungry to satisfied, or being loved versus feeling isolated. No matter what the topic is, no matter which one of the seven that it seems to apply to, whether it's mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, or love, or which one of the operators is not performing properly, such as, do I really have the facts about God? Am I really translating this situation properly? Interpreting it as it really should be interpreted? Am I really trying to demonstrate, proving what I need to attain? And am I being it? Reference has been made intermittently throughout these treatments that one needs to fake it till they make it. What that means is that we need to expound what we think the perfect model is. And as we do that, our thought gets more and more occupied with the model that we should be striving to become. And therefore, our thoughts are filled less and less with an absence of being that model. It's like a individual that is in a foot race, whether it's the 100 meters or marathon, doesn't matter. The point is, one should not be racing against competition. They should be racing against a standard of perfection. Roger Bannister could not have broken a foot race for the lowest time for 1 mile, which was always more than 4 minutes, and he's the first one that broke it, made it less than 4 minutes, or maybe it was exactly 4 minutes, whatever it was. It's a record that no one had ever attained before. He didn't think about his competition. He was thinking about perfection. So there's an example. Is the solution your competition and overcoming your competition? Or is it overcoming a less than perfect idea of performance, of oneself? In other words, measuring against a standard that's irrelevant to other people. If we're in business and trying to be the best business in the industry that we're in, we should forget about that idea. We should be thinking about performing in the best way in every particular department that we can imagine as a perfect model. Forget the competition. We should not be competing with other individuals or other companies. We should be competing with perfection. Are we striving to be perfect in everything we're doing? The main thrust of this treatment is oriented to the word let. And spirit, one of the primary features of spirit, in addition to being substance, is bringing forth, as mentioned, birth, letting a new idea come forth. It's very clearly stated in Genesis chapter 1. It doesn't say God made man in his image and likeness. It says, let God do this. Let God do that. Let God divide the waters. Let God bring forth this or bring forth that. Let God make man in his image and likeness. We have an equal responsibility. The opportunity is there to be the image and likeness of God, but we have to let it happen. We have to visualize the perfect man. We have to be focusing on more and more faking it till we make it. Continue to propound, continue to bring forth the concept that man is perfect. And yes, I want to be that man. I want to see everyone as that man. That perfect, generic, complete fulfillment of the individual reflection of God. I need to see the woman qualities of man as much as the male or man qualities of man. The strength and the courage of man, but the love and tenderness and caring and nurturing of woman. If we don't nurture the ideas when we're trying to cultivate whatever the topic is, whether it's a business that we're in or whether it's a relationship with a spouse or our children, or other relatives, or business associates, or whatever it is, if we don't nurture that, it'll be a failure. Because it does not happen automatically. Because, as Mary Baker Eddy states, we are bombarded constantly with temptations to get off the track. All seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling are full of suggestions of evil, of diversions, of waste, ungodlike thoughts and activities. So we have to let the truth be our guide. We have to let the new idea come forth, the new idea of perfection, as it states in Revelation, a new heaven and a new earth. We have to put away the old man. We have to latch on to the new idea, the perfect man, the one that is both female and male, strong, courageous, but also loving and tender, nurturing every phase of the idea, not just egotistically and arrogantly thinking, well, I'm going to do it. I don't care what anybody else thinks or does or says. I'm going to do it. I'm going to force this self-will till the end of time. Dale Carnegie, one of the most successful trainers and educators of how to be successful, said that you better not have a strong opinion about something, because tomorrow you may change your mind and agree with it. Or agree with the opposition, I mean. So if you have a strong opinion about something, that means you're egotistical. Humility is one of the keys to being successful. A researcher in a chemical lab, if he thinks he knows everything, he's not going to want to follow the truth to the end for a new discovery. So many things that are useful today were discovered without pursuing what was discovered. Sticky notes, the things that used to be so common before computers were around, and you'd write a note on it, and there'd be a little adhesive that would be just enough to stick onto things. It would stick onto glass. It wouldn't do so well on porous surfaces, but it would be where you could write a note and put it somewhere to remind yourself. It could be on the refrigerator, a shopping list, or it could be a note to call someone, or be at a meeting at a certain time, or whatever. That was discovered as a byproduct of trying to discover something else. And that happened so many times. Because if we're focusing on a material solution, chances are we have a very difficult time. And so many of these discoveries come about while one is thinking about something totally different. If we are going to let, as it states in every major sentence in the first chapter of Genesis, if we're going to let, that means we're going to be ready to accept. We're going to let the door be open. A common picture of Christ Jesus is of him knocking on a door. We have it on our website, the Mary Baker Eddy Institute website, which is mbeinstitute.org or .com. He's knocking on the door, but are we going to open it? Are we going to open our thought to the Christ ideas that Jesus tries to and tried to tell tens of thousands of people? Are we going to let those thoughts flow in? God is sending angel messages all the time. That's what the word is, the facts about God. Wentworth Winslow says, think about yourself being in a room with a radio and a telephone. The radio is a symbol, and it's a one-way radio, not a walkie-talkie. The radio is only a broadcast tool, and it's broadcasting all the time, tuned in to station KOG, Kingdom of God. It's broadcasting all the facts about God being mind and spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Are we going to listen to that so we fill our thought and strive for being like what the qualities of God are in our daily experience? Or are we going to just pick up the phone when it rings and listen to anything that anyone says and take that in as part of our thought? If we're going to do the letting, it better be on the side of the radio instead of the telephone. Because the telephone is a human thought, whereas the radio, in this example, is the pure truth. No variance, always true. It's not a dance where you keep moving your feet, you keep changing the goal. The goal is stationary, it's fixed facts about God. We cannot progress in anything unless we let new ideas into our realm of thought. How are you going to progress? You're just going to keep doing the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over, like a broken record or a broken machine or a broken needle. In the old days when they used to have a turntable and they'd put a record made out of vinyl, some kind of a synthetic. And if the needle wasn't good, it would get stuck or some kind of malfunction. It would just keep playing the same thing over and over and over until you went over there and moved the stylus, which was the thing that the needle was attached to. Of course, in the days of electronics, we don't have that kind of mechanism that we utilize. But the point is, are we going to keep doing the same thing over and over, keep making the same mistakes, and expecting a different result? Inventors don't do the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. They make adjustments. They make a record, and they say, okay, well, that doesn't work. I'm writing this down so I don't do it again. Did you notice what was said? So I don't do it again. That's what we need to do. We need to keep a record mentally or physically or whatever so we don't repeat things that don't work. Mr. Rawson was really an advanced student of the truth. And he composed a book, and I'm sure it's through the absolute divine guidance of mind. But he gave us a book called Treatment or Healing by True Prayer. And in there is a section. It's amazing how he was able to condense it in such a small publication, because he has a section in there on 1,315 different problems that one may encounter at one time or another. Or, you know, of that list, it's like a dictionary. We don't use every word in the dictionary, but we use some words on a regular basis. Well, out of the 1,315, maybe there's only a few that apply to us in our lifetime, but it's like an encyclopedia that you can go and pick out what the need is and help you solve the problem. And he shows what the problem is from a human standpoint, and then he shows you the spiritual counterfact that you should be working with to solve the problem. Now, keep in mind, the caveat is that what shows up as a symptom is probably a decoy. So if someone is having a pain in their stomach, or they broke their arm, or they missed a meeting because their car broke down, there's a high likelihood that the symptom does not represent the problem. If one misses a meeting or is late to a meeting because their car broke down, think about the possibility, well, what is the purpose of this meeting? Is it important that I be there? What is trying to be accomplished at that meeting? And if it's something very spiritual, it's a good chance that that is an aggressive mental suggestion that is trying to prevent that meeting from coming about. Leaders of governments that are really trying to transform a corrupt government to a good government are attacked constantly in every way imaginable to try to prevent the good from coming about, of getting rid of corruption and bringing forth goodness, integrity in the government, getting rid of waste and bringing about a uniform method of efficiency and productivity, getting rid of policies that are degrading the morals of the population and replacing them with a standard that is representative of God-derived qualities. They are attacked all the time. There's attempts on their lives, or successful. I mean, we can go back and look at the history of America and see the presidents that were assassinated. And some in particular that I've read and studied about were trying to do exactly what I mentioned. Replace corruption with purity. So we have to make sure, if we're trying to solve a problem, that we are looking not at the symptom, but we are seeking a deeper big picture. Like the professor that hung up a sheet across the viewing area in the classroom with a little black dot on it, and he said, "What do you see?" And finally, I mean, they couldn't figure out, well, what is this all about? I mean, all it is a white sheet. And finally, they started noticing one by one the little black dot. "Oh, yes. You know, what do we see, Professor?" "Well, we see this little black dot." He says, "Don't look at the black dot." He says, "Look at the big sheet. Look at the big picture. It's white, standing for purity. Now, what are you going to color the big picture with? Are you going to let the big picture come forth?" Which, of course, in a spiritual tone, means God. The seven synonymous terms for God and what they mean. How can they be effective for me in my life? Because that's really the focus that we should be talking about, is ourselves. And it begins with our thoughts. And I don't mean a selfish self. I'm talking about start with our own thoughts. That's where we begin. And that's where we really need to end. Because that will include everybody that comes to our thought. Every event, every activity, every relationship. It all stems from our thought. Our experience is a projection of our thoughts. That has been known for centuries. from the great thinkers. That's why Jesus, when he approached somebody that appeared to be blind from a human standpoint, he didn't just walk on by. Everyone probably is familiar with the story of the Good Samaritan, where, somebody really having trouble was walking on one side of the street, and everybody would change and walk on the other side of the street to avoid being contaminated by a man in trouble. Finally, the Good Samaritan came along, and he not only helped the guy, he took him to an inn and told the innkeeper to take care of him, and he would pay for it himself. And he says, "And I'll be back later to make sure everything is going okay and give you more money if you need it to pay for whatever you're doing to help this man." We need to be the Good Samaritan to our own thoughts. And that will automatically include everyone that becomes to our thought, our experience. Everybody that comes into our experience will automatically be affected by that. But we have to start with our own thought. And we have to let our thought permeate everything in our experience. Whether it's a new person we meet, a new business opportunity, a new relationship, current family, whatever it is, we have to nurture that to make sure we are thinking God-like thoughts about whatever comes to our thought. We have to let the Christ consciousness be our guide. That's the consciousness that Jesus exemplified. God wasn't a man. God was not Jesus. Jesus was not God. But Jesus represented the Christ consciousness because he was so pure. Even when they were arresting him and Peter cut off the ear of one of the soldiers, he said, "Put up thy sword." And he healed the man's ear, restored it back to original placement on his head. So we can't use material things to solve what we think is a material problem. As Einstein said, you can't solve a problem working at the same level where the problem appeared. We must move to a higher dimension. We must be looking not at the black dot, but we must be looking at the pure, big picture. And there's no way we can even imagine what God is, because God is infinite. Mary Baker Eddy states that infinite progress is concrete being. We have to be making constant progress in getting a little bit better understanding today than yesterday. Think of money. Think of having $100. And let's say by the end of 1 year you earn 10%. At the end of the year, you now have $110. If you earn 10% again, you're not going to have another $10, you're going to have $11, because your balance is $110, so 10% of that is $11. So now you're going to have $121, not $120. That's compound interest, because you have a larger base you're working from, $111, because you're adding, or $121 instead of $120. So you're not increasing it by 10%, you're increasing it by 10% of the larger balance, which ends up being 11% of the original balance. So anyway, actually that's off a little bit, because it's 11 is not 11% of 110. It's 10% of 110, but it's 11% of the original, but you no longer are working with the original, you're working with the increased balance. So that's compound interest. The Bible says precept upon precept, a little here, a little there. We only have to learn a little bit more each day if we let that add to what we already learned previously. And how do we make that happen? By practicing what we learn each day and what we learned previously. We have to be working from a higher level every single day, higher than the prior level. If one has ever read a book from beginning to end, and in Christian Science, certainly one of our primary books we want to do that with on a regular basis, by the way, is Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. Every time we read it, we should think about, I've never seen this book before. Start with completely open thought to what the message is on that particular word or that particular sentence or paragraph or page or chapter or subtitle, whatever it is. Think about, wow, I've never seen this before. What is it saying? What is the message? And one will find that the message changes every time they read it, if they approach it on that basis. It'll change every time because you will be looking at it from a more advanced foundation. The compounding is going to take effect. Well, I didn't really mention very many of the qualities, so I'll just go through them quickly, not to make this recording too long. Otherwise, it would go several hours at this pace. So we talked about mind, some of the qualities of mind and spirit, bringing forth, very important one in using the word let. And also, spirit is transparency, because it's purity, it's flawlessness, and therefore it's reflection. Soul is the third one, and the soul means sense. Seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling. How are we going to do that? We're going to do that by looking through the lens of the only substance that exists, which is spirit. Which means that every time we look at something, we should be looking at the spiritual sense of what we're seeing. If we're watching an Olympic game and we're seeing people being agile or quick or alert, like in a basketball game, where's the basketball? Always keep your eye on the ball. That's the key in basketball. In fact, baseball, many things. I mean, it's really, where should we be focusing on everything we do? Well, focus is a spiritual quality. Alertness is a spiritual quality. So think about the spiritual quality that's involved. The same with hearing. Are we listening for the still small voice? Are we listening for direction of a spiritual nature? Feeling, what are we feeling? Are we feeling the love of God? Are we feeling completeness? Are we feeling the structure that everything is in order? Tasting. Tasting is like you're digesting it. You're going to understand it. Like Jesus, when he spoke with his disciples, breaking the bread, he was explaining it. It's what we do with our teeth. We're breaking it up into the little parts so we can understand it. So think about the spiritual nature, not, wow, are my teeth good? Do I need to go to get repairs done on them? Well, our repairs need to be in thought. I know of Christian Scientists who have not gone to a dentist in 50 years. I know of an individual that went to one because they got something caught in their teeth and they couldn't seem to get it out and they didn't demonstrate it. So they went into a dentist and said, could you just get this out from between these teeth? I can't seem to get it done. And he was a mature man. He hadn't been to a dentist since, I don't know, 50 years, something like that. I think it was a medical exam for the military or something. And they said they had to, you know, they had to get a complete physical exam before they could be considered for what they were supposed to be enlisting for. And so the dentist said, well, you've got amazingly good teeth. Whatever you're eating and all this stuff, it's working. The guy had not been to a dentist in, you know, since he was in college or when he was ready to go to the military, I guess it was. So, you know, this stuff about going to a dentist every 6 months, it's not any different than going to any other kind of medical doctor. Are you going to do it? Are you going to rely on God? Are you going to consciously treat yourself for that particular universal belief? You can't just ignore it and expect everything to take place. You have to be watching your thought all the time to make sure it's godlike. And you include yourself, your normal functions, in your work. The next one in line is principle. And I already mentioned briefly that was system and structure. You can't build a building unless you have a structure. And it's not going to stay up unless it's a good structure. You can't use lime and sand and whatever the ingredients are of concrete without putting the water in and letting it dry and set to make concrete. Otherwise, it'll be like building a sandcastle on the beach. The first wave will come along and wipe it out. System and structure. It's balance. It's harmony. You got to think about, we want the system and structure to be spiritual because spirit is the only substance. Life is the same thing. We want it to be a spiritual life. Our activities. Life is exercising the qualities of God. Living the qualities of God. And the more we focus on doing it in a spiritual manner, by exercising the qualities of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, then the better the life will be. The more we will attain the concept of eternal life instead of a limited life. A spiritual life instead of one that is dictated by a sense of material birth with all of the ailments that come with that concept. Don't think of yourself as being the product of a man and a woman getting together in intimacy and bringing forth a piece of matter that grows into a baby, and that you're that baby, because then you are saddled with all of the ailments of a material birth, which is a false concept. Mary Baker Eddy states that humanity is basically a combination of lie upon lie upon lie upon lie upon lie upon more lies. When in fact the only creation, according to Genesis 1, if you accept Mary Baker Eddy's definition of the beginning meaning the only creation is God made man in his image and likeness. But we have to do the letting. Let God make man. We have to let the spiritual idea come forth in our own thought. Truth is the sixth synonymous term, and just think of whether something is true or false. Or think of building a building. Is this wall straight if it's supposed to be straight? You know, a wall may be designed to be curved for aesthetic reasons. You know, maybe we want the appearance to be an arch. If it's supposed to be straight, then it's called true. It's a true 90-degree angle with the base. Truth is also assigned the word consciousness. And of course, with consciousness is motive. Do we have a pure motive? If spirit is the only substance, which it is, then the motive has to be a spiritual motive. Our consciousness has to be a spiritual consciousness, which really is the God consciousness. It's not our consciousness at all. It's us reflecting through the qualities of spirit the consciousness of God, which is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Love is the sixth one. The seventh one. And love is the conclusion. In other words, the wholeness, the completeness. And of course, nurturing is a part of love. So if we nurture something to perfection, to a perfect model, if we keep nurturing it, like in a garden, you need a little fertilizer here. So you go to your compost pile that you made and put it around the plant. Plant needs a little more nutrient. You're making adjustment. Maybe the soil that it's sitting in is not the perfect soil. Well, what is our thoughts? Are our thoughts the perfect thoughts? Is our consciousness the perfect consciousness? Or do we need to clean out some cobwebs? Do we need to get rid of some skeletons in the closet? Purify our thought. Are we carrying forth old ideas? Are we being the old man? Are we letting the old man be our influence, our model? Are we continually looking for something better? Are we looking for more of the white sheet, a more pure example? Mary Baker Eddy says that it is our responsibility to build our own model. We have to be constantly looking at the perfect model to form our own experience. Well, that's love. It's the completeness, the wholeness. But we have to do the function of love, which is the nurturing. Be the mother. That's the motherhood. And life is considered the fatherhood. Jesus was an example of life. They couldn't destroy it. They tried to crucify it. They failed. To human sense, they crucified him, but the human sense was not the end result. The end result was the spirit came forth from spirit. It came forth. So he proved that life was eternal. He went through a probationary period after the resurrection, but that was only to let people know that the body couldn't be changed by death, by the belief of death. He still had the hole in his side where the spear wound was, and he still had the prints in his palms of his hands where they nailed his hands to the wooden cross. And that was only to show people that the body didn't change. But then, of course, he knew he had to go to a different sphere because the people were not ready for any more advanced work. He said his work was done, it was finished, because the people were not at the level to even accept what he did. Only one showed up at the cross of his 12 disciples. That was John. And what did Jesus do? After John survived the boiling oil incident and was put on the Patmos Island, Jesus appeared to him, dictated the book of Revelation. Because John was the only one that could receive it. He was the only one that was not fearful of what would happen if he showed up at the cross of Jesus. He and the mother of Jesus and Mary Magdalene, I don't know, there were only a handful of people that came. Everyone else was fearing for their life. Ego. They were concerned about themselves. They weren't concerned about making a statement for truth. Mary Baker Eddy said that the magnitude of the humanity of Jesus enabled his divinity. So when we're doing the letting into thought, we have to let into thought, how can we be a better individual? How can we be more thoughtful of others, considerate, forgiving? And what do we need to forgive? We need to forgive ourselves for condemning. Forget the condemnation. Forget trying to play God and decide who's right and wrong. As Dale Carnegie, I started to say this, I don't believe I finished it. As Dale Carnegie said, don't be strong in your opinion because you may change it when you get a better view of everything. One of the most advanced students of Christian Science was Frederick L. Rawson, and he said, forget about criticizing others on their opinion of what God is. Everyone knows so little about it, it doesn't matter what someone else thinks. That's not our concern anyway, as Mary Baker Eddy states. Our concern is our own thought, our own consciousness. We have to let into our own consciousness the truth of being and don't be worried about what other people are doing, because everyone has to work out their own salvation. We don't work it out for others. They have to do it. One of our political leaders right now cannot awaken the society to what the truth is. He can present it, but people have to individually wake up. That's the reason the countries are in such doldrums. They're so slow at waking up because they've been pounded with lie upon lie upon lie for their entire life. But the truth is squeaking out. It's squeezing out a little at a time. We have to take care of our own thoughts and not be fearful of stating the truth. The founding fathers of America stated, well, we've given you a free country, but whether you keep it or not, it's up to you. They established the opportunity for everyone to be free with the documents and everything that established America as a country. But we have to be active. We have to let. We have to let it be a guide to our life. We have to be disciplined. Mary Baker Eddy states that she makes strong demands on love. We have to be disciplined to make sure that we are not being led astray by a material sense of love or a material sense of anything. We have to stick to the truth. God is all in all. All there is God. There is nothing but God. Frederick Rawson healed a man that had a load of rocks dumped on him instantly by saying, there is nothing but God. The man jumped out from underneath the pile of rocks totally unscratched. There is nothing but God. That's what we have to focus on. We let that thought permeate our thoughts, our consciousness, and let it be our standard. Amen.